leapt to action, hurling ropes to the wind, where gaunt-faced refugees grabbed them and tied the ether ship to the metal road. Lord Auron led the way down a gangplank, proud and victorious, waving to people like a monarch as the rest of the ship's passengers trailed after him. Gotrek was right beside Auron, looking eagerly up at the city gates as Malineth and Trakos hurried after him. The Gravesward formed an avenue of shields for them to march down, and as Prince Volant soared overhead, over the city walls, Auron and the others marched through the gates, entering a square crowded with hundreds more refugees and soldiers. The noise was incredible. The people saw the cocoons and cheered even louder, crying, "Morbium Eternal!" Prince Volant landed in the centre of the square, his bone steed clattering against the flagstones. He dropped from his saddle, attempting to look triumphant, but unable to completely hide the fact that he was injured. He moved in awkward, sudden lurches, but waved his men away when they rushed to help.
"I have kept the oath of the Morn Prince," he cried, looming over the crowd. "I will never abandon our past."
He waved his scythe at the cocoons, which were being carried into the square.
"We will endure."
The crowd hurled his words back at him.
"Incredible," whispered Malineth to Gotrek. "They've lost their entire kingdom, and now they're cheering a half-dead prince."
Gotrek glared at her.
"They kept their oath. And that means nothing to an elf, but it means a lot to them. I thought these realms were peopled solely by treacherous Thegi and cack-handed morons. But these people are prepared to risk everything for the honour of their ancestors."
He took a deep breath, threw back his shoulders and punched his chest.
"It does me good, elf. It does me good to see this. Perhaps not all of the old ways have been forgotten."
They joined the crowd around Prince Volant as he continued his speech, describing the battles he had fought to save the unburied, as more and more people crushed into the square.
"They look worse than their pet corpses," muttered Malineth. "And what do they think will happen when the ghouls get here?"
Gotrek was about to answer when a loud clattering sound announced the approach of more soldiers. A column of Gravesward entered the square, riding beneath an arch and heading straight for the prince. They were mounted on wingless versions of the prince's skeleton steed, and their armour showed no signs of battle, shimmering with a dull lustre in the light that spilled through the streets. There was a carriage at the head of the column that looked like a mobile ossuary, an elaborate construction of sharpened bones led by four bleached, fleshless horses. As the carriage reached Volant, a knight climbed down. He wore a wreath of iron rose petals and held himself with the casual, languid bearing of an aristocrat.
"Your Majesty,"
the noble called out across the noise of the crowd.
"The unburied prophesied your return, but it is wonderful to see you so soon."
Prince Volant laughed.
"Soon?"
He gazed out across the crowd, studying the crowded streets.
"We must talk, Captain Riddens."
The captain nodded and gestured to a nearby building.
"At the chapter house, Your Majesty. We will have privacy in there."
The knights made another colonnade of shields, and they passed through the crowds and approached a tall, narrow building that looked quite different from those around it. Most of the architecture that lined the square was built of the same bone-like contortions as the rest of the city, but this building was a slab of ink-black stone, and its design was simple and unadorned. The only decoration was a pair of folded white moth wings on the door. The captain led the way inside, closely followed by Prince Volant, who had to stoop under the doorframe. High Priestess Lucia, Gotrek, Malineth, Trakos, and finally Lord Auron and a detachment of Gravesward. Auron ordered some of his men to stand watch outside, then slammed the door. The entrance was long, narrow, and lined with crackling torches. It led into a wide circular chamber with a domed roof and 12 alcoves spread equally around its circumference. In each alcove was a white shield, forged in the shape of a wing and carved with small lines of text. There was a circular stone table at the centre of the room, and Prince Volant strode across to lean over it, fists pressed to the stone and head bowed. He was breathing heavily.
"Your Majesty," said Lord Auron, hurrying towards him, "we must tend to your wounds. Let me send for an apothecary."
Volant removed his black and white helmet and dropped it onto the table with a clang, then waved Auron away.
"Later."
He glanced at one of the soldiers.
"Food and water."
The knight nodded and hurried away, as Volant turned towards the captain.
"Tell me everything."
He nodded, speaking quickly.
"The garrisons from the prominence have been deployed across the city walls, as you instructed."
"How many?"
"Nearly 4,000, Your Highness."
"How many archers?"
The captain hesitated.
"There are 4,000 men in total, Your Majesty. Roughly 2,000 Graveswart. The rest are archers, assorted foot soldiers and militia."
Volant stared at him for a moment. He sighed and nodded.
"And the unburied?"
"Other than those you have just brought from the Barren Points, every surviving cocoon has been taken to the Halls of Separation, as you instructed."
Volant nodded again.
"The host that follows in our footsteps is larger than anything we anticipated. 4,000 soldiers will not suffice."
The captain paled, but before he could reply, the prince continued.
"But neither would 50,000. Our only hope is to hold the walls until I and the High Priestess have completed the rite. With the power of the unburied gathered together in a single location, we can use the Searment Stone to guarantee their future."
The captain nodded.
"We have positioned the men exactly as you ordered, Your Majesty."
"I will see for myself before I leave the walls."
Volant grimaced and pressed a hand to his side, closing his eyes. Then he noticed that the captain was looking awkwardly at him.
"Anything else?"
The captain nodded.
"Something peculiar happened at the Serifi docks. The relics..."
He frowned, struggling to explain himself.
"The relics began moving and making noises."
"Relics? Which relics?"
"The ether ships, Maud Prince. The ironclads and frigates. They were shaking and rattling, shedding light from their hulls. Some of them moved with such force that they damaged the nearby buildings."
Volant glanced at Gotrek and Lucia. Gotrek shrugged and looked at Trakos.
"Blame the manling."
The captain had not looked at Gotrek or Trakos properly until that moment. He now stared at them in surprise.
"Your companions, Your Majesty, are they the cause of the problems at the docks?"
Trakos shrugged.
"The old Caradron devices form a network across your whole princedom. In triggering the Duardin mechanisms at the Barren Points, it's possible I have also triggered engines here."
"Triggered them?"
said the captain.
"What do you mean?"
"If that's everything, I will inspect the walls,"
said Volant, ignoring the captain's question and waving to the door.
"1 minute."
Gotrek held up his hand, and Prince Volant halted.
"We had a deal. I saved your corpse eggs. Now it's time to keep your side of the bargain." "Nothing is saved yet," replied the prince. "The Mordants will be here within hours. We need to hold these walls until the High Priestess and I have performed our rite, or the unburied will be destroyed, along with everything else."
Gotrek narrowed his eye.
"Get them to the capital. That was the deal. You owe me a god." "You swore to save them," said Volant,
speaking softly despite Gotrek's bullish tone. Malaneth noticed that the prince spoke to the slayer very differently to the way he addressed the captain. The impatience was gone. He was talking to Gotrek as an equal.
"You have shown bravery and skill beyond anything I would expect to see in a non-Erebid. And there is power in you that goes beyond my understanding. I thought you were insane when you spoke of challenging Nagash. But no."
Volant shrugged.
"Now I think you might just be destined for something greater than the rest of us, Gotrek Gurnison."
"That's as maybe," he muttered. "But I did not come here to fight your wars."
Volant shook his head.
"I'm not asking you to fight our wars. I would ask only this. Lend me your axe and your courage one last time. Today will either rob us of thousands of years of tradition or see us victorious, preserving the dignity of our elders as the rest of Shaiish falls to ruin. If you will help my knights hold the city walls, I can go with Lucia to the Halls of Separation and make my forefathers proud, either by my triumph or by my glorious death."
Gotrek looked at the shields mounted in the alcoves and the poems carved into them. There was a long, tense moment as he seemed to forget about his surroundings.
"I lost everything," he said finally, his voice low. "And now I'm stuck in this shoddy mannish age."
He scowled at Malaneth.
"Surrounded by people who care nothing for tradition and respect."
He met the prince's eye and nodded.
It would do me good to fight for something again. To fight alongside someone who wishes to preserve, rather than change.
Gotrek nodded.
I'll hold the wall for you, Morn Prince.
He stepped closer and tapped his axe on the prince's armour.
But know this. I will also hold you to your oath. When those cocoons are safe, you send me to Nagash.
He spat on the floor.
Or you'll have somewhat worse than ghouls to worry about.
Prince Volant nodded.
We have an understanding.
Chapter 21. The Ghoul King. The Morn Prince ordered Lord Auron to accompany Losia and the Unburied to the Halls of Separation, promising to join them shortly. Then led Gotrek to the battlements above the city gates. As Malyneth and Trakos followed, they received shocked glances from the soldiers who lined the steps. Malyneth smiled at them, conscious of how white and hungry her grin would look in her blood-stained face. She was probably the first elf they had ever seen. She was keen to make the right impression.
"We spied the Mordants even before we saw you approaching," said Captain Riddens,
as they climbed the stairs inside one of the thorn-like towers that lined the walls.
"Every survivor who reached us brought news of them, explaining that the prominence had been taken."
He grimaced, shaking his head.
"They described terrible things, all of them. But it was not until 2 days ago that we started to see what they were talking about."
They reached the top of the tower and stepped out onto the curtain wall. A chill wind lashed against Malyneth, and ranks of soldiers backed away, bowing, as they made space for the prince to approach the wall. He stared out into the darkness.
"What do you mean? I can't see any Mordants out there."
The captain nodded to some soldiers further down the wall, standing beside a catapult the size of a house. They leapt into action, lighting tapers and fastening bundles of dried wood to the weapon. There was a rattle of whirring cogs as the catapult sent an arc of fire towards the stars. It landed with an explosion of sparks half a mile from the city, splashing light over the eventide. Malyneth hissed in disgust. Lit up briefly by the explosion were lines of ghouls. She had seen plenty of the creatures by this point, so it was not their crooked, hunched bodies that shocked her, nor the gore dripping from their wasted arms. It was their lack of movement. Every ghoul she had seen was frenzied, but the light had revealed lines of motionless flesh-eaters. They had gathered in ranks, like a normal, responsible army. Seeing them like that, standing with such a vile pretense of sanity, was worse than watching them leap and claw.
"How long have they been like that?" she said as the light faded, leaving her with a disturbing after-image.
Captain Riddens looked at Prince Volant, who nodded.
"For 5 days."
"They've been standing there for 5 days."
Malyneth laughed in disbelief.
"Doing nothing."
The captain nodded.
"Survivors from the other prominence say this is unusual, that the Mordants are not usually so well ordered."
"Damn right," she muttered. "What is this?"
she asked Gotrek.
"What are they doing?"
The Slayer shrugged.
"Looks like they're waiting for a command."
"A command from whom? And how would they follow an order even if it came? They have no minds."
Prince Volant replied without taking his gaze from the darkness.
"The histories talk of such behaviour. It is not unheard of. Mordants have been known to act with reason in the presence of a..."
He hesitated, looking for the right word.
"A leader of some kind."
"A leader?"
Malyneth was incredulous.
"You saw them. They're like wolves fighting over a carcass. They can't recognise leadership skills. They couldn't distinguish a leader from a thigh-bone."
The prince looked past her to Trakos. The Stormcast Eternal had taken out his square-framed spyglass and was adjusting its nest of lenses, flipping clasps and turning rows of polished brass cogs. He held the device up to one of the eye-holes in his helmet.
"Can you see in the dark with that machine?"
asked Volant. But Trakos did not answer. He stood in silence for several seconds, looking in different directions, until he spotted something and gave a grunt of recognition. He handed the device to Gotrek and pointed out past the wind that led to the gates. Gotrek looked where Trakos was indicating and laughed.
"Hey, well, would you look at that? He's impressively ugly."
Malyneth snatched the spyglass from him and stared through the lens. By some cunning artifice of its azurite makers, the device was able to penetrate the pitch dark. It was not true vision, but a ghostly approximation of sight. Lines of ghouls simmered into view, as if they were painted in smoke, faint, ephemeral, and grotesque.
"What do you mean?" she asked. "Who's ugly?"
She flinched, forgetting that she was looking into the distance, as a revolting shape filled the eyepiece. It was a monstrous, snub-faced creature, like the one Prince Voland had battled over the Spindrift, but this one was saddled and ridden by one of the large species of ghouls. The rider was as corpse-grey and withered as all the other mordants, but where they hunched and lurched, this one affected an attitude of regal disdain, reins held loosely in one listless hand, and its chin raised in haughty indifference. Of all the flesh-eaters she had seen since reaching Shaish, this was the first one that Malyneth had found truly shocking. Its flesh had the same rotten, rag-like texture as the others, and its eyes were the same blank, oversized orbs. But unlike all the rest, this creature was dressed in scraps of armour and carried a rusty longsword on its back. As it shifted in its saddle, Malyneth realized that the ghoul was even wearing a dented circle of metal on its gleaming pate.
"It thinks it's still a man,"
she said, with a mixture of amusement and unease. There was something unnerving about seeing such a debased creature assuming the air of a noble warrior.
"There are more of them,"
she laughed, as she spotted other riders circling the one with the crown. There were half a dozen or so, all with the same bat-like steeds and the same absurd façade of regal bearing. Some of them carried shields and pennants, as though they were proud knights, and one of them was riding side-saddle, as though it were a noblewoman heading out on a hunt with her courtiers and servants. Prince Voland held out his hand, and she handed the device up to him.
"I have not seen them behave like this before," he said after studying the strange figures. "What does it mean?"
He looked at Captain Middens.
"Have you seen this? Mordants behaving like nobles."
Captain Middens seemed unnerved every time Voland so much as glanced his way. At this question he looked distinctly panicked.
"Your Majesty," he mumbled. "I do not understand the question."
Voland handed Riddens the spyglass and directed him to the riders circling above the army. Riddens paled.
"Those things were not there last time we fired the flares, Mornprince. They must have been following close behind you. I have heard..."
He lowered the spyglass and looked up at the prince.
"The survivors all have something terrible to tell. Some spoke of a ruler of the Mordants, leading them into battle as if they were rational human soldiers."
Malyneth frowned up at the prince.
"Did you say ghouls have been known to act with reason in the presence of a leader?"
Voland nodded.
"According to the histories."
Gotrek grinned.
"Then this might be even more interesting than the last scrap. At the barren points they were like drunks trying to find their own feet. But if they fight like actual soldiers, in those kinds of numbers..."
"It might not matter," said Trakos, still staring out into the darkness.
"What do you mean?"
asked Malyneth.
"Lift the spyglass a little higher. Look past the ghouls."
Voland did as Trakos suggested.
"Nothing," he said after a moment. "Storm clouds, nothing else."
Malyneth stared at Trakos with a feeling of grim realization.
"Storm clouds?"
He nodded.
"Bone rain. Coming fast."
Chapter 22. Shelter from the Storm. The streets of the Lingering Keep were already chaotic before Prince Voland sounded the alert. When he ordered everyone to take cover, there was a stampede. Screams rang out through the city. People clawed at doors and dived through windows. There was a desperate battle to find shelter as thunderheads rushed through the night. There were some in the city who had seen the results of the bone rain, and fear spread like a plague, leaving people as frantic and deranged as the monsters gathering beyond the walls. Even those who had not seen it before could tell this was no natural storm. Mountainous clouds boiled into view, flickering with amethyst and enveloping the wynds, hurtling towards the gates that had only been slammed minutes earlier as the last few arrivals scrambled into the Lingering Keep. Malyneth sprinted through the madness, dodging mobs of panicked refugees. She'd almost crossed the square when she realized Gotrek was way behind her, walking casually from the walls, his axe slung nonchalantly over his shoulder.
"Slayer!"
she yelled. Trakos was at her side, and they both stopped to wait for him. Volant and his captain were at the centre of a crossroads, yelling orders to the soldiers and trying to marshal the crowds into some kind of order. There was such a panic that the Gravesward had to form ranks and raise shields, driving people back to avoid a crush.
"There are empty houses and temples in the eastern quarter,"
shouted Volant, climbing onto his steed and launching it over the crowd. Its wings dragged clouds of dust as Volant tried to redirect the people. He waved his scythe.
"Head that way!"
The mob was too deranged to respond, so Volant spoke to the skeleton drake, and it opened its jaws in a roar so loud it cut over the noise of the approaching storm. Finally, some of the people paid attention, allowing the Gravesward to shepherd them away, relieving the bottleneck at the crossroads. But new crowds surged into the square from other directions, and the situation was soon even worse.
"The storm will hit in minutes," said Trakos.
He and Malaneth had stepped out of the flow of bodies, climbing up a flight of colonnaded steps that led to a set of doors. The Stormcast Eternal was looking through his spyglass at the clouds.
"These people are not going to make it."
Gotrek shoved his way through the mob and stomped up the steps. He looked sullen.
"Nagash is scared. That's what all this is about. He's doing everything he can to stop me reaching him. He's swamping this city in skull chewers so the Morn Prince can't send me to him."
He glared at the carnage in the square.
"And it's not going to work."
"I can never decide whether to be impressed or amused by you," said Malaneth. She waved one of her knives at the scene below,
thousands of desperate, fear-maddened people clambering over each other as a cataclysmic storm gathered overhead. It looked like an apocalypse.
"Does nothing here give you pause? Is there nothing about this situation that makes you think you might not be destined to reach Nagash?"
Gotrek laughed.
"Bloody elves! So quick to accept defeat. That was always your problem. Comes of being knock-kneed poetry readers."
He looked up at Trakos.
"We need to reach these halls of separation everyone keeps blathering on about. That's where the prince sent the ghost eggs. We'll go there and stand watch over the doors. I'll take on every ghoul in the realms if I have to, until the priestess has finished her spell. But I'd rather guard a door than a city."
Malaneth pointed at the tusk-shaped spire looming over the city.
"The halls of separation are miles away, and Trakos just told you the storm will hit in minutes. You have the legs of a pot-bellied pig. How exactly do you intend to outrun those clouds?"
Gotrek shrugged.
"The manling will work somewhat out."
Trakos stared at him. Then he nodded and stood a little taller. Malaneth rolled her eyes.
"How does this lump-headed brute have such an effect on people? How has he made you believe in yourself again, Trakos? How can your faith have been renewed by a god-hating savage?"
Trakos ignored her, peering around at the architecture.
"This is an advanced civilization by the look of the buildings."
He waved at an ornate arch reaching over their heads.
"They have preserved things most realms lost in the Age of Chaos. These techniques must date back to the time before Chaos, when Sigmar still walked the realms. I see his hand in every—"
"Sigmar!" guffawed Gotrek. "You can't lay everything at the feet of the hammer dunce. These people have learned some half-decent engineering skills, and that can only have come from dwarves, or at least those pale shadows of dwarves you call Duardin."
Screams broke out not far from where they were talking, as the Gravesward began using their scythes on the crowd, cutting people down in an attempt to save others who were being crushed by the mob. As the crowd heaved in a new direction, bone carriages splintered and toppled, and fleshless horses panicked, trampling through the mayhem, their black plumes bobbing as they tried to find a way out.
"Minutes away, you said," reminded Malaneth, waving at the looming clouds. "Perhaps now isn't the time to discuss engineering."
Trakos was still facing Gotrek.
"If the Erebid built their city on Duardin principles, how would they have dealt with sanitation?"
Gotrek shrugged.
"Latrines? Sewers?"
"Have you lost your final shreds of sanity?"
muttered Malaneth. But Gotrek was grinning.
"Sewers! Of course!"
Trakos studied the facade of the building they had climbed up to.
"That ironwork looks like waste pipes."
He leant out from the steps and looked down to the corner of the building.
we could follow that outlet and see where it leads.
You want to crawl through the sewers? Asked Malaneth. For miles?
Nowhere safer than underground, replied Gotrek. Besides, which would you prefer, Muk or Bone Rain?
Trakos led them back down the steps, muttering and glancing back at the walls of the building as he tried to follow the route of the pipes. At the bottom of the stairs they hit the crowd. Malaneth grimaced as people crashed into her, but the bulk of a Slayer and a Stormcast Eternal was enough to smash through the crush. Trakos waved them on, heading round to the corner of the building. As they left the main flow of people, clouds began sailing over the walls. Some of the soldiers managed to force their way down from the battlements, but others took cover in towers and archways, looking as though they were preparing to battle the weather.
Here,
said Trakos, hurrying down an alleyway at the side of the building. He reached a metal hatch and stamped on it with his boot, creating a loud, reverberating clang. Gotrek grinned.
Good work, manling.
He climbed up onto an overturned cart and looked over the heaving crowds.
Mob Prince!
He howled. But there was no sign of Volant. The noise of the crowds and the growing storm drowned out even the Slayer's booming tones.
Gotrek!
Cried Trakos, as he levered the hatch open and revealed a flight of stone steps leading down into the darkness.
We have to go now.
Where is that blessed prince?
Snarled Gotrek, his cheeks flushing with anger.
He needs to order these people into the sewers or they'll all be massacred. Morn Prince!
He bellowed, his eyes sparking, but there was no reply. Malaneth ducked past Trakos and climbed down the steps, descending into the darkness. Glimmers of white shimmered over the walls.
It's now or never, she said, looking back at Trakos.
Mob Prince!
Cried Gotrek a third time. The gold sparks in his eye were mirrored by a flash from the rune in his chest, and his words tore through the city, charged with the power of the rune, ringing out with such fury that people staggered. The sneer fell from Malaneth's face. Gotrek's cries sounded like the voice of a god. The mayhem ceased. Everyone in the square turned to face him.
The sewers, you imbeciles!
Gotrek's face was purple.
Get underground!
People stared at the Slayer, clearly shocked, then did as he ordered, sprinting for drain hatches and sewers. A few seconds later, a bright rattling sound filled the city as the downpour arrived, crashing over the walls like waves of broken teeth. Gotrek leapt down from the cart and raced towards Malaneth and Trakos, with hundreds of terrified people following him, all trying to escape the deluge.
Go!
Cried Gotrek, pounding down the steps and disappearing into the darkness. There was a loud splash as he disappeared from sight. Malaneth grimaced at the thick stench that rushed up in his wake.
Smells as bad as him, she muttered, hurrying down the steps.
Chapter 23 The Ascension of King Galen.
The wolf is with us!
Cried King Galen, as he felt his steed changing beneath him, its bones snapping and elongating and its muscles swelling. He could feel the undeniable power of his lord as the horse became a sinewy armoured drake, with vast taloned wings and powerful reptilian jaws. The creature pounded its wings and lifted him from the road, up over sun-drenched wheat fields. On his back, he could feel the weight of his ancient longsword, Rancor. He had sworn not to draw it until he had the leader of the rebels kneeling before him. The sword had been blessed by shadow priests on the eve of the war, impregnated with the might of the wolf, but he would not fritter its sorcery on any old warrior. He would unleash it with great ceremony on the head of his would-be usurper, with the hounds of Dinan witnessing his righteous fury. Nia and Lord Melvas were with him, their steeds elevated by the same miracle as his own. Other lords of the Dinan followed quickly after, laughing in wonder as their horses' hooves became claws and their flanks sprouted wings. They left the road and began racing through the air, trailing tails through the early dawn as their riders raised spears and howled. The same miracle had occurred at each of the previous battles, but Galen still felt his pulse racing as he looked down at his army, charging into battle below him.
"One last time!"
cried Nia, grinning at him from a few feet away.
"One last time!"
he laughed, gripping his spear as he rushed towards the battlements. The traitors were so awed by the miracle of the wolf that Galen landed on the walls to find them already abandoned. The rogues who had seized the castle were scrambling for cover, tumbling down the steps and fleeing across the courtyard. Some of them had managed to injure themselves in their desperation to escape, and as King Galen rode down the walls, he reached a group of bloodied, terrified wretches who tried to crawl away at his approach.
"I offered you mercy at every turn,"
he said, pointing his spear at one of the gibbering wrecks, who was slipping and stumbling towards him, shaking his head. The soldier muttered and cursed, unable to meet his eye, and Galen finally understood what was happening. He could not believe he had not suspected it before. The glorious victories, miracles like the Drake's, the terror in the eyes of his victims, they all pointed to one thing. He was ascending. The oldest of all the prophecies had come to pass, the prophecy of the Wolf Lord. This was why the Shadow Priests had imbued Rancor with such power. This must be why his later years had been so quiet and lacking in glory. The Great Wolf had been waiting for this moment to raise him up and show him the glory that had always been his due. Nia's Drake landed beside him on the wall, and she leant out from her saddle, slamming her spear into the man's chest. He staggered away, dazed, then fell as she wrenched her weapon free.
"Not much of a fight," she said with a smile,
glancing around at the few wounded soldiers left on the walls. They were all flinching and cowering, as though attacked by invisible foes.
"I'm changing, Nia," Galen said,
his voice trembling with the glory of his revelation. She looked at him in shock. Then she clearly saw the pride and power in his face, and her smile broadened.
"As are we all, my love."
She drove her horse on down the wall, drawing her longsword and cutting down everyone in her path, as the other lords landed, looking around in wonder at the abandoned battlements.
"There is still work to do,"
cried Galen, pointing his spear down into the courtyard and the streets beyond. There were hundreds of wounded and fleeing soldiers. Lots were running into buildings to hide, but many were crawling into sewers, fleeing underground like rats.
"The traitors refused every entreaty to peace. Show no mercy."
He clicked his heels, and his drake leapt from the wall, hurtling down towards the crowds. Figures scattered as he landed, not even trying to defend themselves.
"What is this?"
called Nia, landing near him.
"They battled so hard to hold the outlying keeps, and now that we've reached the capital, they have no fight in them."
Galen sat back in his saddle, watching the slaughter.
"They know they've lost."
He looked around the castle.
"It's even bigger than I expected."
She raised an eyebrow.
"Maybe this is a more suitable place to rule from."
"No," replied Galen. "I will make an example of this city. I will leave no brick standing. I will raise it to the ground. And if anyone considers challenging my rule again, they will only need to look here to see what their fate will be."
He pointed to a bright gleaming needle of white stone.
"Make for the central keep. The ringleaders will be there."
Galen turned to the lords who were landing in the courtyard behind him.
"Open the gates, assemble the men. Gather the war machines. Bring this city down."
Chapter 24. Sacrament of Blood. Trakos' light flashed over barrel-vaulted ceilings, revealing the incredible age of the sewers. The stones had been rounded and smoothed by the centuries, slumping and swelling in places as though bloated by tumours. It looked like they were crawling through diseased innards. The fetid river running down the tunnel was knee-deep on Malaneth, but that meant Gotrek was wading up to his thighs. The water had no chance of slowing the slayer, though. While Trakos called out directions, a brass compass in one hand and his blazing scepter in the other, Gotrek raced through the filth, vaulting pipes and leaping over the remains of old cave-ins.
"This is more like it,"
he shouted, his great axe slung across his back as he rushed through the darkness. He slapped the wall.
"Good solid work. I could be back at the Eight Peaks."
Trakos looked to Malaneth for an explanation. She shrugged.
"He shares your enthusiasm for drains. How nice."
"The North Pipe,"
said Trakos, casting light down another tunnel. Gotrek nodded, humming cheerfully to himself as he splashed off in that direction.
"How long will this take?"
Malaneth asked, catching up with Trakos.
"It looks like the main sewer runs from the central tower out to the city walls. We should be able to take a more direct route than if we were above ground. We might be there in less than an hour."
She was about to reply when the tunnels juddered. Dust and brick fell from overhead, throwing up splashes of muck and clouds of flies, and Malineth would have fallen if Trakos hadn't grabbed her arm.
"Prince of Murder," she said. "What was that?"
He shook his head.
"Maybe Nagash's storms are powerful enough to shake city walls."
"I don't think so. It didn't seem like that in Klemp. I think that's the Flesh Eaters entering the city."
He strode on through the sewer, hurrying after the disappearing shape of Gotrek.
"Ghouls! How could they shake walls?"
"Siege engines?"
Trakos shook his head.
"You've seen them. How would they have the skill to use war machines?"
"Remember that giant?" she said, racing after him. "The thing that Gotrek fought in the Barren Points? Perhaps they have creatures like that up there."
He glanced at her, then nodded.
"We need to move faster."
They ran as fast as they could through the effluence, but after a few minutes there was another tremor, then another, and Malineth found herself struggling to keep up with Gotrek.
"What if he succeeds?"
she gasped, swatting flies away.
"What?"
"What if we make it to the tower and Gotrek holds back the ghouls until the prince performs his spell?"
He shrugged.
"We have to hope that Losir and Prince Volant are right, that her right will protect the city."
"They said it would protect the unburied. That's not quite the same thing."
"What option do we have?"
"None. But that's not really what I meant anyway. If this works how Gotrek hopes it will, if the Erebid really do send him to Nagash, what will you do then?"
Trakos glanced at her.
"I will..."
He hurried on, shaking his head.
"I will go with him."
"Really?"
She nodded to Gotrek. His broad, hulking shape was clearly picked out in Trakos's light, and they could hear him humming cheerfully to himself and laughing at jokes he was muttering under his breath.
"You'd follow that to the Lord of Undeath?"
"Whenever you speak of him, your voice is full of such bile."
She laughed.
"Of course, look at him. Who wouldn't find him ridiculous?"
"But..." Trakos looked at her again. "Since the Barren Points, I hear something else in your voice, too."
"What?"
"You have seen the same thing I have seen. The Slayer is not just some wandering brigand. He's important. He means something. He's here for a reason. The Priestess saw it, too. And so does the Morn Prince. Gotrek has more than his own doom riding on those tattooed shoulders."
She sneered, but could not find it in herself to disagree.
"What will you do if he succeeds?" asked Trakos. "If they send him to Nagash, will you just stay here?"
"I don't know," she snapped. "None of my options seem particularly enticing at the moment."
She was about to change the subject when an explosion rocked through the sewer, bathing her in amethyst light. They fell into the muck, unbalanced by a tremor even more violent than the preceding ones. Malineth thrashed under the water for a moment, then lurched from the filth, cursing and spitting. Gotrek was up ahead, shrugging off rubble and looking up at an opening that had appeared in the ceiling. A column of purple light was shining down through the hole, and it framed the Slayer, picking him out of the darkness.
"Trakos!"
hissed Malineth, realizing that his torchlight had faded. She whirled around, scattering flies and water. The light from overhead was enough to reveal him, trapped beneath the surface of the water, pinned in place by a huge section of pipe that had been dislodged by the blast.
"Can you breathe underwater?"
she muttered, rushing back towards him, realizing how little she knew about Sigmar's storm-born warriors. She could see him straining in the murk, trying to heave the shattered masonry off his chest.
"Let the dullard die," said the voice in her head. "Good riddance."
To Malineth's surprise, she found that she was not willing to leave Trakos behind. Something about their conversations had intrigued her, and she felt that they were unfinished. Besides, she had a feeling that Trakos might still prove to be the key to getting the rune back to Azir. She grabbed the fallen pipe, trying to heave it away. It was impossible. She could not shift it an inch, even with Trakos shoving from the other side. Bubbles rushed from his armor, and he thrashed furiously.
"Gotrek!"
she cried. The Slayer had backed away to the far side of the hole in the ceiling, and there were now shapes in the column of light that separated her from him, pale glittering shards clattering down through the hole.
"Bone rain," she muttered.
It was hard to see Gotrek clearly through the downpour, but she could tell he was shaking his head, powerless to reach her. She looked the other way, back down the tunnel, and saw pale purple light coming from that direction too.
"Another hole," she muttered. The whole place is coming down. Trackles twisted violently under the water, straining and bucking against the pipe. She grabbed it again and pulled with all her strength, but it was hopeless. "Gain!" she wheezed, backing away and shaking her head. As she watched Trackles drowning, an unexpected fury washed through her. If she had engineered his death, she might have seen matters differently, but the idea of him being taken against her will was infuriating. "We need you," she muttered, trying again to shift the stone. Light flickered over the walls and flashed in her eyes. She thought for a moment that another hole had opened in the ceiling, but it was Trakos's torch, shining beneath the surface of the water and throwing rippling lights across the arched ceiling.
"Gotrek!"
she shouted again, but she knew it was useless. If the Slayer passed through that curtain of rain, he would be cut apart like anyone else. Splashes echoed down the tunnel, and she turned to see a hunched, loping shape lurching into view. Even in silhouette, she could recognise the wiry, twisted frame of a ghoul. She cursed and backed away from Trakos, whipping her knives from her belt as more ghouls rushed from the shadows, their pus-yellow eyes flashing in the light of Trakos's torch. She could see the Stormcast Eternal watching her from underwater as his struggles grew weaker. "What can I do?" she said, taking another step away from him as the crowd of ghouls thundered through the sewer, twitching and grunting as they splashed through the effluence. There were dozens of them just minutes away, and even more dropping into view behind.
"Well," she demanded, "any advice?" "You should have killed the Slayer. Then you wouldn't be stuck down here with your back to the bone rain and flesh eaters about to rip your lungs open."
"Thanks," she said. "Very helpful." She looked up the tunnel again. Gotrek had gone, carrying on without them. It made sense. The Slayer had never made any pretense of friendship. If he had ever had friends, they had died a long time ago. But, absurdly, she still felt an odd sense of betrayal. In the months that she had travelled with the Slayer, she had begun to feel as though their fates were somehow entwined.
"I'm a fool," she muttered.
The first of the ghouls was only a minute or two away. She could see its black, jagged teeth drooling saliva as it tried to fix its febrile gaze on her.
"Give us a death to be proud of."
There was none of the usual venom in her mistress's voice. She sounded unusually calm.
"Show Cain we deserve a place at his side. These things bleed. Cut prayers into them."
A cruel smile stretched across Malaneth's face. There were far too many ghouls for her to win this fight. There was no need to play it safe. Her mistress was right. She may as well abandon herself to the glory of the kill. She could revel in the bloodshed and devote herself, body and soul, to the Lord of Murder.
"In mine hand is the power and the might,"
she whispered, dropping into a battle stance.
"None may withstand me. By the will of Cain, I will bathe in the blood of mine enemies."
Not far from where she was standing, Trakos finally became still. But Malaneth had already forgotten him. There was nothing left in her mind but the moves of a lethal dance. She lashed out as the first ghoul reached her, spinning on her heel in an elegant pirouette to open its throat and send it crashing into the water. A bright umbrella of blood engulfed her, and she sighed with pleasure before sidestepping the next ghoul, hammering her knives into its back and ripping it apart with an ecstatic howl. The kills merged into a fluid ballet of hacks and lunges. Malaneth flipped and rolled, singing to Cain as she opened throats in his name. Her mistress howled along with every cut. Chapter 25. A Test of Faith. King Galen rode hard through blood-filled streets, howling orders as the city toppled around him. Ancient towers and sprawling manses were pulled to the ground, and as the traitors fled in panic, his men cut them down. It was brutal and merciless, a massacre the like of which he had never witnessed before. For a moment, he wondered if he had gone too far. Had he become the kind of tyrant he had always sworn to oppose? Nia saw the hesitation in his eye.
"This is the only way,"
she gasped, plunging her spear into another back and wrenching her drake round to face him.
"When people hear of this victory, they must quake. They must be horrified and appalled by the fate of these people."
Galen nodded. They had discussed this many times on the road to the capital. He was old and without an heir. If people believed they could turn on the crown without fear of death, the kingdom would not survive another year.
This was his last chance to show what became of anyone who tried to claim independence. And yet, as his soldiers tore down statues and performed far worse atrocities in his name, his battle lust left him.
"To the tower,"
he said, pointing his spear at the building that dominated the whole city.
"Once I find the ringleader and introduce him to Ranker in front of the whole city, our message will be clear, and then we can finally rest."
He ducked as in the next street a huge temple collapsed, pulverized by one of his war engines, sending a writhing tower of dust up into the hazy summer heat. A powerful sense of purpose rushed through him. The wounded rebels were all fleeing to the tower at the center of the city. Once he reached that building, he would ascend. He was sure of it. He would breach that central keep and butcher everyone inside, and then the great wolf would crown him not just king, but immortal wolf lord. He glanced at Nia, grinning despite the carnage boiling all around him, and Nia would be his eternal queen. This was why they had come, not just to quell a foolish rebellion, but to reach this point and be elevated to a new life. He grabbed Nia's arm.
"I can feel him riding with us."
He pointed his spear at the tower, and his voice trembled.
"He's in there. I know it. Today, we will walk at his side."
She stared at him, her eyes glistening. And they rode on, killing with more fury than ever before. Chapter 26. A Path Through the Darkness. Malaneth lost herself to the ritual of sacred murder. She abandoned every thought of Sigmar and the Order and thought only of Cain, moving with more speed, cruelty and elegance than she ever had before. Bodies piled up around her, scored with holy sigils and drained of blood, until finally, inevitably, the sheer volume of them began to overwhelm her. As the piles of dead collapsed towards her, she stumbled, banged against the sewer wall, and fell, cursing, to her knees in the water. A ghoul locked its bony hand around her neck, but she sliced through the wrist, cutting the hand free and staggering clear as the mordant lunged after her, oblivious to the blood rushing from its arm. As Malaneth backed away, cutting down more ghouls, she trod on something hard and cold under the water. It was Trakos's scepter, shining through the murk. Still fighting, she crouched and grabbed the golden rod. The ghouls stumbled, dazzled by Azurite sorcery. The thing was covered in runes and dials, like all of Trakos's equipment, but Malaneth did not attempt to decipher its workings. She simply used it as a club, smashing it into the face of the next ghoul to reach her, and scattering beams of frigid light through its shattered skull. The scepter proved a useful weapon, but the memory of Trakos dulled some of her fervour. She glanced over at the fallen pipe. His turquoise armour was still visible, but he was no longer moving. Cain's hunger still pounded through her veins, but another thought was now vying for her attention. An idea had occurred to her. She vaulted a ghoul and splashed down near Trakos. She jammed the scepter into the water, forcing it under the fallen pipe. Then she stood on it, using her weight to try to lever the masonry off Trakos. The scepter was made of the same unyielding alloy as Trakos's armour, and it took her weight, lifting the pipe up from the water. Malaneth balanced on it like an acrobat, ducking and swaying as she fought, then fell back as Trakos rose like a river god, swinging his hammers furiously and driving the ghouls back.
"Don't expect my help every time you fall over," she gasped,
dodging to Trakos's side and fighting with her back to his. He laughed, but it turned into a series of hacking liquid coughs. He managed to keep fighting, but he looked like he could barely stand.
"Gotrek,"
he managed to gasp. She shook her head. He snarled in frustration, lashing out at the ghouls with growing strength.
"He needs you."
"What?" In the confusion of the fighting, she wondered if she had misheard him.
"Gotrek needs you," said Trakos. "You're his sanity."
She laughed.
"You dunce! I've been looking for a way to get rid of that oaf since the first day I met him."
"Then why are you still with him?"
Malaneth thought of how she had failed to kill the Slayer on the Spindrift, when it would have been so easy. Trakos pointed at the scepter Malaneth had left sticking out from beneath the fallen pipe.
I have an idea,
he coughed, blood spraying from his helmet.
On the count of three.
On the count of three what?
Jump.
They were now so completely surrounded by ghouls that she could no longer see the walls of the tunnel.
Where?
He started counting.
Wait!
Malaneth cast around for a place to leap, but he ignored her, and as he reached three, she jumped, landing feet first on a ghoul's shoulders and knocking it back into the others. Trakos moved at the same moment, but rather than jumping clear, he dropped down onto the scepter wedged beneath the pipe. The metal held, even under his weight, and it levered the remains of the pipe from the wall. Bricks and mortar smashed into the tunnel, along with a deafening torrent of water. Malaneth fell back, knocked from her feet. She scrambled to right herself, but jumping clear had kept her from being washed away by the sudden influx of water. Bodies and stones thudded into her, and as the water rose, she thought she might suffer the same fate she had just spared Trakos. She tumbled backwards, coughing and cursing, then managed to leap from the stinking water and get back on her feet.
"What in the name of Cain are you doing?"
she cried, as she saw Trakos a few feet away, the sceptre in one hand, a hammer in his other. He punched his hammer into a knot of ghouls and nodded to the opening he had made.
"It will rejoin the main tunnel further up."
Malaneth glanced at the quickly rising water.
"So will our corpses!"
She leapt past him, diving into the tunnel. She had only moved a few feet when she realised that Trakos was not with her. She twisted to look back over her shoulder. Trakos had staggered away from her, hammering his way into the centre of the ghouls.
"Go!"
he cried, glancing towards her as the ghouls boiled over him, tearing at his armour. Cracks of light appeared in his neck brace, tiny fingers of lightning that danced across his armour, scorching the air and flinging shadows across the walls.
"Now!"
he yelled, a furious warning in his voice, as he hurled his sceptre towards her. She caught the sceptre, but instead of fleeing, she scrambled back down the pipe towards him. The water was already up to her waist, and the walls were juddering, filling the sewers with a worrying, groaning sound.
"What are you doing?"
demanded Trakos, smashing more ghouls back into the water. She glared at him.
"It's your fault I'm down here. You're going to lead me out."
"It's not safe to be near me,"
he grunted, grabbing the neck brace of his battle plate, causing more sparks to slash through the gloom.
"I'm damaged."
"Who isn't?"
She threw his scepter back to him.
"Lead me out."
The water was now up to her chest.
"You're no slayer. Doom-seeking doesn't suit you. Stop looking for a glorious death. I'll never get out of this wretched place without you to lead me. It's a damned labyrinth. Without you and your machines, I'll wander down here forever."
He hissed a curse and used the scepter to punch through the ghouls, pushing back towards the hole he had torn in the wall.
"Follow me,"
he said as he clambered up into the pipe. The Mordants tried to rush after them, but after Malaneth had killed the first few, the way became clogged with twitching bodies. Dozens more tried to cram into the pipe, but they were so frenzied they only compounded the problem, jamming it with thrashing limbs.
"This way,"
called Trakos, wading on through the water, his torchlight flickering over wet, mossy bricks. As she hurried after him, she noticed something.
"The water's rising in here, too."
He nodded without pausing to look back.
"The whole system is flooding. Something is destroying the city."
Water was spraying from overhead, and every now and then came a resounding boom that caused the structure to shudder as though it had been punched.
"Is this thing going to come down?"
Trakos nodded, pausing at a crossroads and pointing his scepter down each route, shining blue light into the darkness as he tried to decide which way to go.
"Something is smashing through it."
He took out a small golden box and flipped back the lid to reveal whirling needles in a polished wooden frame. He stared at them until they stopped spinning and all pointed in the same direction, then snapped the box shut and waded on through the water. They had not gone more than a few steps when there was another boom, much closer this time, and a shuddering crash as the ceiling behind them gave way, filling the tunnel with bricks and clouds of dust. When the dust cleared, Malaneth saw that the way back was completely blocked by fallen rubble. The water was now almost as high as it had been out in the main sewer. Malaneth was waist-deep in filth.
"Don't worry," said Trakos, carrying on. "My etherlabe was clear. There is an exit up here that will lead back to a larger pipe."
He rushed on towards a rusty circular door with an iron wheel for a handle, similar to the doors on the Spindrift. He grabbed the wheel and tried to turn it, but the mechanism started to crumble in his grip, shedding lumps of rusty metal. The water was up to Malaneth's chest. She moved to Trekkos' side and grabbed the wheel, lending the Stormcast Eternal all her strength. More rusty metal came away, but there was no sign of the thing turning. The tunnel was shaken by another booming blow, and the sound was now so loud that there was no mistaking the truth. Something big was headed their way. Trekkos handed her his scepter and took something else from his belt. It looked like a sapphire encased in silver, and as he raised it over his head, light shimmered in the heart of the stone. With his other hand, he unclasped his helmet and removed it, letting his white plaits tumble down his breastplate. Malaneth gasped at the sight of his face. It was even more brutal than the last time she had seen it. The mass of old scars had been joined by a new kind of injury. In several places, the rough mahogany of his skin had changed, covered now by a tracery of silver capillaries that glittered and flashed as he moved. There were pulses of light blinking across his cheeks and jaw, where the silver threads were most numerous.
"What's happening to you?" she said.
But Trekkos did not seem to hear. His eyes were closed, and he pressed the blue gemstone to his forehead. The wall shook again.
"Whatever that is, it's close," she muttered.
Trekkos was mouthing words. He took the stone away from his face and shook his head, looking at Malaneth.
"This is the only way."
He returned the stone to his belt and turned back to the rusted door.
"There is no other route back to the main sewer."
The water was up to Malaneth's chin by this point, and she cursed. The wheel that opened the door was now completely submerged. She ducked under the surface and tried to grab it, but her hands could not even grip it in the filthy water.
"What now?"
she gasped as she stood back up. Trekkos shook his head, looking at the wall of rubble behind them.
"We could try digging."
She laughed, stepping on some broken bricks and hauling herself a little further away from the quickly rising water. The walls shook with so much fury that she fell. From underwater, she saw Trekkos stagger backwards away from the rusty door, bathed in light and trying to shield his unarmored face. She leapt back up out of the water and came face to face with a demented, blood-splattered snarl.
"What are you two playing at?"
yelled Gotrek, framed by the door he had just destroyed.
"I have a god to slay!"
Chapter 27 The Flesh-Eater Court.
"I'm touched that you came back for us," said Malaneth, as the slayer dragged her through the remains of the door.
Gotrek ignored her, grimacing at the sparking silver veins shimmering across Trakos's face.
"Ooh, Grungni's teeth, no wonder you wear a hat."
Trekkos looked puzzled, reaching up to touch his cheek. Malaneth staggered on up the pipe, struggling to keep her head above water.
"Can we compare wounds later?"
For a while they were swimming more than walking, but eventually they reached another intersection and tumbled back down into the main sewer, sliding and bouncing over the rubble until they landed with a crash at the bottom of the main concourse. The water was only about a foot deep, and they sat there for a while, panting and coughing. Even the slayer seemed tired, leaning back against a broken support strut and massaging his massive forearms.
"If you two stop dawdling, we might reach that tower before the whole city comes down."
He waved his axe at the various openings that led off the main pipe.
"I hope for your sake that you know which way to go, Mandling."
Trekkos was studying his reflection in the surface of his helmet and muttering to himself.
"It won't get any less ugly," said Gotrek. "Can you get us to the tower or not?"
Trekkos fixed his helmet back in place and nodded.
"You only needed to keep going straight on. I told you, the main sewer leads from the tower."
Gotrek shrugged and climbed to his feet.
"Let's get moving then."
"But you already knew that," said Malaneth. "Trekkos told us the route when we first came down here."
She gave the slayer a wry smile.
"You were still in the main tunnel. You weren't lost. You didn't need to come back for us. I think you missed us."
Gotrek glared at her, then stomped off up the tunnel.
"I just wanted to make sure I didn't wander around down here until doomsday."
Malaneth winced as she stood and stumbled after him. Every inch of her was bruised and cut, and she could not remember the last time she had eaten.
"Elves," snorted Gotrek. "No stamina."
She shook her head in disbelief.
Every time I start to think you might be slightly interesting, you open your mouth. Then I remember that you're an irascible infant trapped in the body of an ale-infused boar. Gotrek snorted and spat.
What's an irascible?
Don't play the fool, she muttered. You're absurd enough.
It's stopped again, called Trakos.
They looked back down the pipe and saw that he had halted near one of the holes, spilling light down from the streets above.
The bone rain has stopped, he said,
shining his torch across the opening.
What of it? Said Gotrek, walking back to him. You said the sewers were the most direct way. But they're flooding.
Trakos waved his light over the water, rising all around them.
It's not as high yet as it was in the smaller tunnels, but it will be soon. And this whole structure is unstable. Whatever has been shaking the city has dislodged the foundations.
He waded to the far side of the tunnel and shoved a fallen column. Gotrek and Malineth backed away as the masonry toppled towards them, smashing against the edge of the opening above and creating a crumbling ramp back up to the street. Gotrek barged past her and clambered up the column.
Keep up, Elf! You don't want pretty boy fishing this rune out of my corpse while you're still swimming with turds.
She gripped her knives tighter as they climbed up after him, amazed to think that she had actually been pleased to see his face a few minutes ago. They emerged to a scene of such desolation that it halted them in their tracks. The storm had been brief but apocalyptic. Roofs had collapsed and windows had shattered and scattered across the streets in every direction. People were crawling through the wreckage, clutching wounds or sobbing over the corpses of their kin. Even Gotrek looked shocked. The tower at the city's heart was burning brighter than ever, bathing everything in the amethyst pall of death magic, and the desolation was terrible to look at. Gotrek grimaced at the wounded and the dying.
The prince could have got them underground quicker. This could have been avoided.
He nodded at the tower.
Looks like something big's happening in there.
He rushed across the street, clambering over wrecked carts and carriages and ignoring the pitiful figures heaped around him. As Malineth and Trakos staggered after him, he dropped down into an empty street and hurried past the facade of what looked to be a temple, wrought of the same pale, bone-like curves as the other buildings they had seen. There were broad, sweeping steps leading up to it, and dozens of wounded people were sprawled across them, obviously struck down before they had managed to reach the temple doors. Malineth and Trakos tried to keep pace with Gotrek, but they were both carrying dozens of injuries, and by the time they dropped down into the street, he was far in the distance, running down a broad, empty boulevard that led to the foot of the tower. People were sprawled all around them, groaning in pain and fear, both soldiers and civilians, cut apart and defenceless, and ghouls were rushing towards them from every direction.
This is a deliberate tactic, Malineth